You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 24th, 2017, and episode number 299. That's right, 299, ready to flip the odometer on the show next week. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yeah, 299. Well, we'll talk about that in a second here. But this week, what's coming up in the news this week? We have... You might not have heard, but it's kind of all over the place. Thylacine, again. Yeah. Seems like he's in the news every week, or he or she, whatever it is. I didn't look under the fur. But anyway, thylacine, seen in Perth. And we'll also go inside the brain of a thylacine, or a tassie, as they call them, down under. And we'll also talk, I know you don't want to talk about it, I know you don't want to hear his name, but we're going to talk about Trump tonight. What does he have to do with the paranormal? Well, you've probably seen that story too. It's no surprise. UFOs followed Trump to Washington. We'll talk about that story. We'll also talk about the CIA releases millions of pages of information. You've probably seen that one as well. Crop circles. Probably didn't hear about this one. Crop circles will get a look by physicists. That's going to be interesting. We'll also have the book of the week, talk some conferences, conventions, and who knows what else will crop up tonight. Crop up, you get it. Anyway, this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology and psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Great organization. Lots of fantastic classes if you're into anything paranormal. UFOs, cryptozoology, EVPs, you name it. You can find a class there or get a degree and have some fancy cool letters after your name. It's pretty fun. So, yeah, I made mention. Next week is episode number 300, and I don't know. I haven't really put a whole lot of thought into what sort of festivities would go on. I was going to have maybe a cake delivered to the studio here with 300 candles, but it would probably burn the entire place down. And I don't want to do that. So I'm not sure. Maybe we can do some questions, some Q&A. In the chat room, people could call in, whatever. I'll think about it during the week, but plan on at least some questions. I'm going to kind of open it up, and it all depends on how much news is going on. It's kind of been rough the last couple of weeks, to be honest with you, with the weather and the whole presidential thing still going on. But all that should be quieting down. So we'll see. I think we'll open it up probably at the bottom of the hour next week. And I'll field some questions about the show, some of the history of different things that maybe I've not explained or talked about, different stories or whatever. I don't know, but it's kind of a personal achievement for 300. But realistically, I'm looking more to 312. You wonder, well, what's the significance of 312? Well, 312 would be 6 years worth of shows at 52 weeks. And I've been doing this for well over 8 years, and we started out as a monthly show. I've taken some time off as well during all this time, but we'll talk more about the history next week and some inside, I guess some inside information about the show over the course of its history and some of the different things that I've done and covered and different things like that. I mean, heck, we've already talked about the top 10 paranormal news stories since 2010 on through last year. So all that's taken up. Yeah, but 300 next week. I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be exciting, like I said, to flip the odometer to 300. Kind of neat, I guess. Kind of a bragging thing. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, well, it's Tuesday already. And this weekend, it was a long weekend. It was fun. Didn't have to work, which is a very unusual thing for me to go through a weekend and not having to go to work. And Saturday night, I got to attend a meeting with the Cleveland Ufology Project at Cleveland Community College's Western Campus. And that lasted, 2.5 hours. And normally they have a guest. They have a guest speaker. But there was no guest this week. They just kind of talked about some of the news, which I completely interjected with and told them some of the stuff that I'd researched and everything. And it's quite interesting. We talked a lot of topics were discussed about UFOs and all sorts of aspects that you couldn't even imagine that deal with this. A lot of conspiracy stuff, but that it kind of goes hand in hand with a lot of the UFO things. Thomas Wertman, the MUFON State Director of Ohio, is pretty much present at, I would say, just about every single one of these Cleveland Ufology Project meetings. And he helps out Aaron Clark. Aaron Clark is pretty much oversees the group and in operating what they call CUP, C-U-P. I call it Cleveland Ufology Project. Now, the Cleveland Ufology Project, it was founded in 1952. And it's the oldest existing UFO research network in the world. Now, there's some that were created before this, but they're now defunct. I don't think it's been running consecutive years, but if it has, I stand corrected. But it's been in existence for quite a long time. I know when I first got into the UFO field, they were already around, and tried to get Aaron out to speak at some of the events that I was taking part in to kind of bring some of the UFO crowd into them through the years. So I know they're out there. I know they've been out there. And, you know, MUFON is obviously much, much, much larger, and it's more well-known. I mean, heck, they had their own TV show for a while. It was only established in 1969, and it owed its early growth to when the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, that group, you probably know it as NICAP, when it ceased operations in the 1970s after being formed in 1957. If you're interested in meeting up with a very unique group of people, very knowledgeable people, and various backgrounds, various disciplines throughout the Cleveland area, and they've all had, a lot of them have had experiences of varying capacities with UFO phenomena one way or the other. If you're interested in this, the Cleveland Ufology Project meets in Cleveland, Ohio, again at the Tri-C Western Campus, Cleveland Community College. They meet every third Saturday of every month. I mean, if you're interested, let me know. Shoot me an email, or you can check it out at clevelandufo.com, I guess. clevelandufo.com. Pretty simple. Gives you all the information you need to check them out. Come out there. It's I think when they have a guest speaker, it's like $5 for donation. It's $30 for the year. It's 12 months. They'll take care of it. They'll write you down. I just got another card. I missed last month's when I should have been there to re-enroll, but got my new membership card, which is cool. Got my MUFON membership card in the mail again. Been a member of them for, let's see, what does it say, 2002? I thought it was longer than that. Anyway, Cleveland Ufology Project, a great group of people. And again, one of the oldest organizations of UFO research, and they do a lot of different things during the summer. And it's a little hard to do anything like this right now, but during the summer, they'll go out and do sky watches, and we report on different events that are going on in the paranormal and things like that. And I've been asked to speak there next month, the February meeting. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. It'd be interesting. Maybe something in the news. I don't know. We'll find out if something interesting happens between now and then. If not, I'm just going to wing it. But it will be fun. Now, that was Saturday night, and I didn't get home till like midnight. It was a lot of fun. But now Sunday, I got a chance to visit Mansfield Reformatory. I haven't been there in – it's been a long time. It's been a few years, really, and it's strange when you don't see the familiar girl is what I call her. I've seen it so many times. I've been in there so many times. I know it like the back of my hand. And it's funny because the first couple of times I went there, I got so lost. Like I had to have a map and I still got lost. And I just forced myself to walk around that place so many times that now I pretty much know it like the back of my hand. Now, yeah, Mansfield Reformatory. Some people call it Ohio State Reformatory. It's got a few other names. Now, yeah, I didn't get to investigate it. I didn't even get in the door. I couldn't even get through the large gate that's out front. But we were in the area. I should say I was in – well, we were in the area. But I've been in there so many times. It doesn't matter. It was just to my family and I were all together. So I wanted them to check out the building. And I've investigated a number of times. And I got so many stories about that wonderful building. But my wife and I drove down to meet her sister, Becky, in Ashland, Ohio, to celebrate her birthday. And her parents were also down there. They made the trek down there. So we all met down there together at Applebee's since Becky had moved down to Columbus. And weird as it is, everybody pretty much in the family is a fan. They're a fan of the show, the Paranormal News Inside. It's weird. It's everybody likes the show. I don't know why. But yeah, so big thanks to Chris, Becky, and Peggy, who tune in nearly every week here on the Paranormal News Insider. I know Chris and Becky are like a week or two behind, so they'll probably hear this next week. I don't know. Maybe they'll catch up this week. And as you guys in the chat room know, my mom is also a listener to the show. So I guess it's kind of a family affair, I guess. It's interesting. It's weird. I'm not used to people in my family being kind of a part of the stuff. When I first started in the paranormal, you kind of didn't tell other people that you were doing this stuff because they kind of look at you funny. But now it's kind of like you're a rock star. It's kind of cool. But anyway, I had a lot of fun this weekend. It was really neat to connect with the ghost stuff and the UFO stuff, and also be able to spend time with the family at the same time. It's kind of rare that you get to do all that in one action-packed weekend. Now, the events listing, I've added a couple of events. If you're checking that out for stuff in your area, you might want to check it out again. Again, go to paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top, and I'll constantly be adding new stuff to this. And one thing I just added is the 5th annual Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania. Don't have a whole lot of information about that right now. I don't think their website is updated, but it is on the list for August 5th, 2017 in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is I spoke there last year, and I've been invited to go out there and speak again. Johnstown is the home of the big flood, unfortunately, many, many years ago. And it was a great time last year. Stan Gordon was there. John Ventry from Hangar One was there. I was there. Can't remember some of the other names, but there was a really interesting group of people. A lot of different topics were talked about. I talked about cryptozoology. John Ventry talked about UFOs. And Stan Gordon kind of talked about everything in the Pennsylvania area. And it was a really good time. There was a lot of information talked about with the edge on Pennsylvania and the strange stuff that happens there. Weird weather phenomena and different information, which was really, really interesting to see at a paranormal event. But the one I'm waiting for, the one I'm really, really excited about, I can't wait. It's actually the next one that's happening for me in May 5th through the 7th, 2017, Farmington, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's right. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I am looking forward to this. I was talking to Jay Bajerton. Man, was it last night? Night before? I think it was last night. I talked to him for like 3 hours on Facebook Messenger, just going back and forth. It's a lot of Highlander stuff. If you're not a fan of Highlander, it's a really awesome movie from the 1980s. You have to check that out. Christopher Lambert, lots of heads getting chopped off. It's a really good movie. And it's a favorite of mine. It's a favorite of his. Check that out. He's Jay is going to be speaking there. He designed all the T-shirts, the logo for the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And we had a good time last year. We were sort of fighting with walking sticks last year in the campground. A nice little crowd was watching that. It was a lot of fun. But he'll be speaking this year, which is exciting. He's a very knowledgeable guy. I was going to be driving pretty far away from Wisconsin. Now, also going to have Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Ronald L. Murphy, who is, he's had a couple of books of the Book of the Week mentioned here on the show. And Steve Coles, Stan Gordon, and Steve Gordon. Well, all Stan Gordon, Steve Coles, not the same person here. They're going to both be returning. Both really, really awesome people. Stan Gordon is just, my goodness, if you don't know who Stan Gordon is, check out some books of his. He is a longtime researcher, extremely knowledgeable, a very down-to-earth person. It seems like some people, the longer they're in these fields, kind of wackier they get. Maybe I'm talking about myself. I don't know. But he's maintained a very level head, very level approach, and he's been a major influence to a lot of people, including myself, for his long, long career. Steve Coles, the Squatch Detective. Lives up there in the hills in New York. Very knowledgeable guy. It's going to be a great time. If you have not got your tickets, you better get them quick. I don't know why. Just get them. Get them. Because last year, all of a sudden, tickets just sold really, really fast. And people were scrambling at the gate to get in. It was a little packed because they allowed people to get tickets the day of. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think it's going to sell pretty good leading up to the event. And you're not going to be able to get in. You're going to wait too long. It's going to be over. Trapper John Tice from the Mountain Monsters television show, he's going to be there as well. Now, what's the big deal? You may ask asking yourself, what's so big about this Pennsylvania Bigfoot camping adventure thing? Well, I'll tell you what. You're not just getting speakers. Those of us standing up there talking about things we know or things we've done or whatever. You're also going to have workshops. So you're going to learn how to do some of the things that we do, not just be taught from a PowerPoint, but actually get to see how things are done. So workshops. You'll also have day and night hikes with those of us that are experienced out there in the field. Steve Coles, Jay Bajerton, myself, Eric Altman, Ronald Murphy has also got some experience out there in the field. So we'll all be taking groups of people out there and showing you what we know and how to do it. I'll teach you anything and everything I know. If you ask the question, if I get the opportunity, I'll teach you everything I know, which may not be a whole lot, but you'll still learn something, I hope. There's also raffles. We had such a great time with the raffle last year. It was hilarious. We were outbidding each other for everything. Cookouts, movies, and the best thing of all, the proceeds go directly to local charities. And it's kind of near and dear to me because two of the charities – are for animal charities and local animal shelters. So it goes to pets that are in need. And that's a very near and dear thing for me. So I'll be buying some more awesome books. I'll be bidding Jay for more primate books to add to my collection and different things. It was a great time. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. They got T-shirts this year. Did I mention that? T-shirts. Mine's pre-ordered. You better get yours. It's a really cool shirt. It does say the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, the adventure of a lifetime. Now, Jay and I had a little conversation about this, and I told him how I felt about that. I think it's great. It is the adventure of a lifetime, but we've already done it. We had one last year. So it's not really the adventure of a lifetime. I mean, maybe for some people it is. But personally, as you know, as I've said it probably 50, 60 times, I think it should be Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It will be intense. Okay, crickets. Intense. You get it? We're going to be camping out. We're going to be intense. Jay liked it, though. He laughed. So he may be creating something along that lines, which would be awesome if he does. Okay, what else? Well, that's, you know, we got to move on here. Cryptid news. Let's get into some cryptid news. We're going to talk about Tassie the Tiger. That's what they call it, Tassie. It's a cute name, I guess, for a meat-eating marsupial, I guess. Well, the Thylacine Awareness Group. Now, these guys have been in the news for quite a long time, last few years, actually. And last year, they were siphoning out some of these stories every few weeks, every couple of months, just to keep themselves fresh in the news. And now they're back. They're doing it again. And they've released another video. Whoops. Well, I put that in there twice, but that's okay. You guys can figure that out, right? There it is. Okay. Anyway, put the link in the chat room there. If you're in the chat room, if you're not, well, you don't know what I'm talking about. You don't get the link. You don't get the fun of reading along. Well, I don't really read the links. I don't really read the stories. I do research on them. I have about 6 links just for this particular story. But anyway, the Thylacine Awareness Group. Now, last year, we did cover a couple of stories about this group. Now, they've been trying to bring awareness, obviously that's in their name, to the fact that many people in Australia are seeing thylacines, or what's called the Tasmanian tiger, or Tassie, for some of the local news stories. It makes it sound a little bit more soft and comforting. These little guys are purportedly on the loose. Now, the problem is the thylacine has been extinct since the late 1930s from Tasmania and has not been recorded on the mainland of Australia for around 2,000 years. 2,000 years. The Thylacine Awareness Group set up cameras in a remote area near Perth, Australia, which is in Western Australia. So if you're looking at the big continent, it's kind of, it's kind of funny shaped like a saddle, I guess. That's on the left-hand side for those that don't understand how to read maps. No big deal. No big deal. Neil Waters, the founder of the Thylacine Awareness Group, thinks that these sightings are due to the potential fact that there's possibly, maybe, kind of, sort of, a subspecies of thylacines that have managed to survive over the centuries and now are thriving in the outback. He used the word thriving. I don't know about that. Waters said, quote, "We are saying that they're quite possibly is due to the plethora of sightings in many key areas of the mainland and similarities of what people are reporting," unquote. Waters also feels a painting by Robert Dale in 1834 titled Panoramic View of King George's Sound is proof that the thylacines exist, since it shows a number of thylacines, which state that this means the thylacine might have been around back then. Well, how else would they paint them? Well, the problem is there's only one creature in this panoramic print. I found it online. I've looked at it and tried to study it, and I only see one little animal running away, and it's kind of questionable as to whether it's actually a thylacine or a fox, which is kind of funny in a way because that's kind of where we're at with all these thylacine videos. It's just nothing is really jumping out and saying this is definitively a thylacine. Well, let's also not forget that no modern thylacine bones have been discovered in Western Australia or the whole continent for that matter that are not at least 2,000 years old or older. So what's in the photograph then? I don't know if you've seen this, but it's if you click on the link there in the chat room, you can see an image of this. Now, if you look at the image in the context that it is in fact a thylacine, it does look convincing. When I first saw it, I'm like, that looks kind of like a thylacine. This is pretty good. Maybe this is it. But then I kind of got to studying it. I saw the picture of it where they had originally cropped it from and looked at the wide view. And I'm like, I'm not sure. Now, many people have speculated that this could be a fox or a kangaroo. And then when you think of these animals in the context of them being in the picture, they also seem to fit the bill. Now, Waters even admitted that the head does look like a fox, but the tail looks very different in the fact that it's kind of thick and the fact that it's hairless, which is a kind of a dead giveaway. And a lot of people would say, well, that's a fox with mange. And it's possible. It's possible it's a fox with mange, but it's weird that we've seen two or three videos all over the place with the same kind of tail. So it is interesting. And some people have said that it's possibly a branch or a stick on the ground behind this animal, and it's not really a part of its body. Potential. I think that one's been put to rest, though. But it's not enough to say definitively yes or to say no. But there's no corroborating evidence. There's no tracks. There's no clear photograph. There's no other evidence left behind. There's no sign such as droppings and things like that to confirm that this is in fact a thylacine. Now, there's another interesting thing to consider. There was a number of photos taken in this area right around the time that this purported thylacine was sighted. And one of the photos, if you look, it's there's a fox that is entering a den, and it's not more than, I don't know, I'd guess maybe 30 yards from where this purported thylacine was seen. That being said, I'm not sure it's a fox because of the fact of the tail being hairless. Some of these other ones, I would definitely say that they're a fox and a fox with mange, because you see the body and you see some patches of hair missing, which is pretty much a telltale sign of a mangy fox. But I don't know. Part of me says that this is actually, and I'm not an expert at these guys. I've only seen them in zoos and stuff like that. So I've never seen them really truly in the wild. But I would have to say, my opinion is, they're kangaroos, or at least it's a kangaroo in this picture. Just the way the face looks and the way the body structure is. I think, we've gone to fox so many times. But regardless, if you're not sure between a thylacine, a fox, or a kangaroo that's in a picture, I think you pretty much have to toss it out. There's nothing to corroborate any one of those three. All it would take is a print, a footprint. I mean, a kangaroo footprint is a heck of a lot different than a fox print. So I think something like that would be enough to settle that debate pretty quickly. Well, it's the bottom of the hour, so I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, be sure to tune in tonight after the show. You get an hour to decompress, to go get a Scooby snack, to go watch, I don't know what's on at 8 o'clock. But anyway, be back at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. What is that? 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific. 5 p.m. Alaskan, 4 p.m. Hawaiian. I don't know. I can keep going. Frank Lee and his co-host Donald Davis. Tonight, they're going to be talking to Butch Davis. No, he's not. Not Butch Davis. Butch Witkowski. I'm looking at something else at the same time. Never do that. If you're kind of just being dramatic about something, don't look around. Look at your script. Butch Witkowski. Butch is the director and founder of the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania, editor of JAR, the Journal of Alien Abduction Research, member of the Institute of Frontier Science. He's also a Paranexus consultant and advisor for the ufology field. He's a member of the Academy de Ufology. He's a former MUFON chief investigator, star team investigator. I'm really jealous of that. And state section director. And to top it off, he's a former law enforcement officer. Again, Butch Witkowski tonight on the Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frankly and co-host Donald Davis. Right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVRadio.com. I really want to disable this Facebook thing that keeps popping up. That's where I'm reading all these things from all the time. It's really distracting. Anyway, enough of my problems. Let's get back to the news. We're still talking thylacine here. And another story on the thylacine. This thing kept popping up in my news feed pretty much every day, even today, again, 50 in a row. It's a pretty big deal, I guess. This one is about scientists who scanned the preserved brains of thylacines with imaging techniques to come to the conclusion that the Tasmanian tiger or thylacine was a predator. No, not the movie. He was a predator. He ate meat. He stalked things and killed them. Not like the movie. There's nothing with Arnold Schwarzenegger here. But it wasn't a scavenger. That's the big deal here. It wasn't just some lazy animal like the Tasmanian devil. Oh, yeah. See, Tasmanian devil. Everybody ran out there in the 1990s and got a little Tasmanian devil tattoo on them. They're scavengers. They're not predators. They're scavengers. Well, the Tasmanian devil is a known scavenger, although it is a skilled hunter. It's pretty much optimistic. Optimus Prime. No, he's opportunistic. That means that if there's roadkill, well, he'll eat it. If there's a little baby deer running around or a baby wallaby or whatever it is, a baby koala fell out of a tree, he's going to eat it. Whatever opportunity arises to eat something. But it appears that through magnetic resonance imaging, which is MRI for short, I'm sure you've heard of MRIs, and diffusion tensor imaging, which is known as DTI, everything is an acronym anymore. It is now known that the thylacine were once top predators. Now, in order to conduct the study, this is the interesting part of the story, I think. Scientists were granted access to two of the four remaining brains of the thylacine. That's all that's left. There's only four on the whole planet that are preserved, obviously. They're not just like hooked up to machines or something like that, you know, diabolical. Now, the three-dimensional brain scans of the thylacine and Tasmanian devil have become part of a new project called BrainArc. Now, BrainArc is a digital archive of three-dimensional brain structures of the Earth's megafauna, big animals, I guess. Different way to say it. Now, the BrainArc project will help create digital reconstructions of brains to help solve many riddles about animals and their brain structures. The thylacine was once the largest carnivorous marsupial in the world, and it was native to Tasmania. But this designation has now been passed down to the Tasmanian devil. They're not really that big. However, the Tasmanian devil has been severely reduced in numbers since the 1990s due to devil facial tumor disease, which is an aggressive, non-viral, transmittable, parasitic cancer. It's really ugly. And it's really sad because they fight each other and they kind of bump into each other face to face. They're really tough guys. As you know, Tasmanian devil. You've probably seen the Looney Tunes cartoon where he just spins around in this like vortex, little tornado thing. Well, that's kind of how they are. And unfortunately, that contact is spreading this devil facial tumor disease. And it's caused 70% of the population to have been lost since 1996. And it's not showing any signs of slowing. And the Tasmanian devil was declared endangered in 2008. So that's some of your animal facts for the week. We've talked about thylacine so much. I'm sure everybody that listens to the show is an expert on the thylacine at this point. I mean, I love those guys. And I do think, and I've mentioned it before, I do think that if of any of the cryptids that we've talked about on the show, from dodos to orang pendek to Bigfoot to Yeti or any of these things, I honestly think that the thylacine, it's got a chance. It's got a very good chance of being discovered. I would say that they're out there somewhere, maybe. Good chance. I'm not saying definitively. I'm not going to fund an expedition unless it involves a cruise to Australia. But anyway, I think that's is very possible. They're out there somewhere. Maybe not in the Australian outback there, but maybe in Tasmania. Maybe they're there. I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to wait and see. And if it does happen, you'll hear about it first here on the Paranormal News Insider. But now we're switching gears. I'm about ready to throw these. Okay, the headphones are coming off. Had some headphone difficulty here earlier before, and these other ones are very, very, very distracting. So I'm going to rip those off. Just feels weird without them. Anyway, we're going to go to UFO news. And this one is from the Department of It Didn't Take Very Long for This to Show Up. You didn't know there was a department of that, did you? Well, there is. Yeah, I'm going to throw the throw that link in the chat room there. Okay. And yeah, from the It Didn't Take Very Long for This to Show Up department, we have startling proof. Yes, proof that UFOs are following President Trump. I know you don't want to hear politics. I get it. I just heard like, I don't know how many people just click off the podcast or tune into another show. I know, I know. I'm sick of all of it too, all the political bantering that's been going on. But I've done a pretty good job keeping my mouth shut here on the show about it. But this has to do with a recently released story about UFOs, obviously. It contains footage of the then president-elect Trump. Now, he was getting in the plane. It wasn't Air Force One. It was a plane that looks like Air Force One, but it was just a government plane. As he was heading to Washington, D.C. from New York City, and it took place back on January 19th, prior to the inauguration. So during the video, and it's important to note that this was shot from a stationary camera, probably from a rooftop far from the airport. Now, it was shown live on Fox 10 in Phoenix, I'm sure elsewhere as well, and it was recorded for this YouTube video. Now, eagle-eyed observers saw the two UFOs in question and submitted a case file to MUFON. Yes, the Mutual UFO Network, case number 81655. In case you want to check out some pictures, some still pictures of this. Now, the video in question, we see a United States government jet take off and fly away from the airport. Again, from a stationary camera. Plane is traveling a couple hundred miles an hour at a fairly significant distance here. I mean, I would say probably when it was taking off, first taxiing and then taking off was as close as it got to the camera. Then after that, it's getting an altitude and it's going away from the camera. So it's moving pretty quickly. Even though it's banking, it's still moving away from the camera. And I would say it's probably at least a mile or so at the point when even the first object enters into frame. About 1 minute and 50 seconds in, we see a white object in the distance. Now, again, this plane is probably a mile away. It's just taken off. It's still gaining altitude, and it's just banking slightly to the right. And we see this white object in the distance. So it's pretty far away, so it's got to be huge. Huge. And about 2 minutes and 55 seconds in, we see a quick-moving black UFO move quickly in front of the jet, nearly blowing it out of the sky. I mean, it almost blew up the plane. That's how close it was. And it was going almost twice as fast. Went from left to right. Now, the plane was flying in the video left to right, and this object entered in from the frame from the left and zoomed past it. My goodness. It was proof. It was UFO. was right there. And all of America could have seen it if they weren't protesting. Anyway, I promised. But now, is this definitive proof of extraterrestrials monitoring the presidential election? I mean, we all know that we're not the intelligent life out there. Now, what's even scarier is that this happened not only in front of people that were watching it on TV, but over the skies of New York City, one of the world's busiest cities, and over one of the busiest airports in the United States. I mean, somebody's got to know something. If these were two huge UFOs, I mean, the one, this white object, my goodness, it was huge because it was behind the jet. It was a big white object. How could you not see that thing flying around? And the other one, my goodness, it had to be going 5,000 miles an hour. Now, actually, what I think is scary is that people actually think that these are UFOs to begin with. I mean, I'm just kind of toying with you guys here. But again, we're looking at the video of a moving plane from a stationary camera very far away from the location of the jet. Now, odds are extremely high. And I'm not going to use numbers, but the odds are extremely high that the first object, which is a white UFO, it's never in focus. It's they're following the plane as it moves. And this object is there and the camera pans by it. So it's probably moving. It's probably moving in a different direction. It's more than likely an airplane at a distance. And again, this plane's taken off. It's banking. But the camera is up high, so there's a chance that maybe that's a plane actually on the ground, or it's a plane that's coming in for a landing. But I don't think it's a UFO, just because you can't explain what it is. I mean, yeah, technically you could say it's a UFO. I mean, anything could be a UFO if you don't know what it is. But to go to the extreme to say that this is a UFO, so it means it's an alien kind of craft that's following the president-elect, no, that's just silly. It was filmed on a high-speed camera from a very great distance over a large metropolitan city. And it had to be extremely huge. But, I mean, common sense would say it's just a jet. Now, the second object, now this one passes between the camera and the jet. So it's pretty close because we see it go in front of the wing would be the starboard wing. As the plane is flying left to right, and it's going faster than the jet. But if it's closer, it's probably not going faster than the jet. It's probably only going a few miles an hour. And again, the jet is at least a mile or more away at this point. So a lot could be going on in that airspace between the jet and this camera. A lot, including birds flying, which is more than likely what this was. A lot of people have already pointed that out, that looks kind of similarly like a bird. Why are we freaking out about this video? I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem like it's a mystery to me. And I really don't think that this is part of some kind of ongoing conspiracy of UFO sightings surrounding Trump. Like some people have said that this isn't the first time, blah, blah, blah. You know, anytime anybody can attach any kind of conspiracy dealing with UFOs with any president, I think they feel like they win something. And to create a mythology around this kind of stuff, or to add to the mythology of UFOs, it's pretty disturbing. And I just kind of wanted to talk about this video. Normally, it's something that I would just laugh at and just move on to the next story. But it's disturbing that people want to continue these kind of things. And it's obvious if you're watching this on TV and you're really paying attention, and you, even if you record it and watch it again, it's obvious each time I watch it, it's more and more plain to see that it's not what people think along the lines of being a UFO. Now, I mentioned the MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, case number 81655, and Dita in the chat room says that I did not mention back on the first show of January that I did not mention my guesses that I usually do. And that would have been on, let's see, January 3rd. She says that I did not mention my prediction for the month. Well, it would be for January, because January stats are still accumulating right now. So in February, well, it'll be two shows from now. Hopefully I get that information. Not next week, because next week is the last day of the month. Wow. But the following show will have the January statistics. Now, she says I didn't mention it, so I'm going to mention it for the record, just in case I didn't mention it. I'm going to go back and listen, Dita, just to make sure, prove you wrong any chance I can. Anyway, so I predicted, it's highlighted here on my little spreadsheet thingamajiggy, January, I see 516 worldwide sightings and 398 U.S. sightings. That's my prediction for the month of January for the MUFON sighting statistics, January 2017. And it was kind of off in December, way off. It's pretty close to November. We'll see. We'll see. Now, other news. We're going to talk about the CIA. Great. Well, now they're listening, which is good. Add to my stats. The CIA has released 13 million pages of declassified documents, or maybe it's 12 million, or maybe it's just 11 million, which is confusing because I've seen that number on three different stories. Anyway, these once classified documents deal with the subjects including UFO sightings, psychic phenomena, as well as the Stargate Project. No, not that Stargate Project. Technically, much of this information actually has been publicly accessible since the mid-1990s. Well, you just had to travel to the National Archives in College Park, Maryland, and go to the back of the library between the hours of 9 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. during the week and be able to use one of the four computers that accessed the information. So obviously not too many people were able to access this information that wanted to. Now, several people have been putting pressure on the CIA to upload this information on their website, including Mike Best, a journalist who crowdfunded over $15,000 to go into the library and print out the archives and upload them himself to his own website. It's a lot of money. It's like $400 a page. Well, in November, the CIA announced that it would upload the 13 million or 12 million or 11 million pages, who's counting, to allow the information to be seen by everyone, everywhere. Now, the CIA admitted that this presented a roadblock to many researchers to use the CIA Record Search Tool, or CREST. So everything's an acronym. That had been in use for 25 years at that point. It's kind of hard to go to the library at those specific times. I mean, the hotel rates are outrageous in the D.C. area. Also discussed on that page is information on the Berlin Tunnel, which is interesting. I don't think I'd ever heard of that. A tunnel was used to intercept Russian and East German transmissions during the Cold War from 1952 to 1964. Now, there was also hundreds of general articles on here, just general stuff. A lot of stuff was just newspaper clippings that were photocopied. This is a big letdown. I read, gosh, I don't know how many, but one was actually on Curlian photography, which I thought was really interesting. And there was a number of psi-related experiments that involved Russell Targ, Jeffrey Mishlove, and a lot of other recognizable names, which was stuff that was probably available in parapsychology journals. But it was interesting to read it from being documented by the government. In all honesty, I didn't see a whole lot of groundbreaking information in the few dozen pages I read. I spent, I don't know how many, like 3 or 4 hours just reading through this stuff. And it was really nothing mind-boggling or anything that I hadn't heard before or anything that was really disturbing or that I really see as doing anything major for the UFO field or anybody else. And most of it wasn't even UFO related at all. It was more psi-related stuff than anything. But it's great that this information is now out there, that putting pressure on the government to disclose any kind of information, whether it's UFO sightings or otherwise, it's working. Stuff is coming out. It's getting out there. It's available on the web. You just have to sift through all of this stuff and read it. Now, in case you're wondering, I mentioned the Stargate Project. It might not be what you're thinking. You're probably thinking the TV show Stargate, It wasn't a wormhole created by the, you know, what do they call that? The Einstein-Rosenbridge kind of apparatus. But it was actually an army unit in Maryland that was looking to potentially use psychic phenomena in military and domestic intelligence applications. And if you've ever seen the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats, if you haven't seen it, don't rent it. Well, rent it. Don't pay for it. Steal it. It's not worth it. It's not very good. But it's kind of based on the Stargate project. Some of the psychic tests and psychic things that went on there, but it wasn't hopping through time through the Einstein-Rosenbridge kind of apparatus thing. Yeah. And what do we have here? Oh, crop circles. This is a good one here. I like this. My favorite story of the week. I'll call it. Physicsworld.com is the member magazine of the Institute of Physics, which is a large organization of physicists from around the world. Richard Taylor, a director of the Materials Science Institute at the University of Oregon, published an interesting article back in 2011 about crop circles that suddenly popped up on a couple of paranormal news sites. I'm not sure why. That there's a sudden interest in an article that's over 5 years old, but the article does look at crop circles in kind of a new direction. Now, Taylor isn't suggesting that circles are created by higher life forms vacationing at the third planet from the sun, or should I say because aliens. What he is suggesting is that crop circles have become a far cry from the plank and rope days when Doug and Dave plundered English countryside by creating crop circles. Doug and Dave, just look them up. Just type in Doug and Dave, and you'll read all kinds of great articles on how these guys fooled the world for quite a bit of time. Now, Taylor feels that physics is playing a larger part than ever, including the use of global positioning satellites and lasers to create the highly detailed artwork. He also suggests that microwaves are possibly used in the fields. No, not those kind of microwaves, not like making popcorn, not in the sense of that kind, but actual waves that could bend stalks quickly and efficiently without breaking them. Taylor states, quote, crop circle artists are not going to give up their secrets easily. This summer, unknown artists will venture into the countryside close to your homes and carry out their craft, safe in the knowledge that they are continuing the legacy of the most science-oriented art movement in history, unquote. As far as writing about crop circles, Martin Durrani, the editor of Physics World, said, quote, it may seem odd for a physicist such as Taylor to be studying crop circles, but then he is merely trying to act like any good scientist, examining the evidence for the design and construction of crop circles without getting carried away by the sideshow of UFOs, hoaxes, and aliens. Unquote. Ouch. Sideshow. Well, the sad thing here is that crop circles don't really get much attention anymore, since it's fairly agreed that an overwhelming majority of these creations are known to have been made with human hands. Now, tools that are not known are still more than likely those that we don't know about. A lot of people guess, or no one's come forward really and admitted them. They're still probably more than likely human creations. But the big mystery remains is how these intricate pieces of living art are created. If you've been looking at crop circles over the years, since the 1990s, they've become just so overwhelmingly intricate in the last even 10, 15 years. It's just phenomenal. So something is up. Now, again, this new article on this, well, I guess the old article, appeared in Collective Evolution, which mission statement includes, quote, believe in creating challenge. No. Let's see, challenge. Change by raising consciousness and thinking outside the box, unquote. And, quote, challenge the current status quo by shaking up how we currently think about the world, unquote. Collective Evolution is quick to point out that despite the editor's comments, UFOs are no longer a sideshow and has seemingly received some respectful nods from the government. Well, I guess that's primarily John Podesta. And the article also hints at the viewpoint that since these circles are so intricate and no one has come forward, that this has to be, yeah, you guessed it, aliens. The article also cites the fact that the science journal Nature published an article in 1880 on the subject long before Doug and Dave came clean in 1991 and proved that they were behind the growing phenomena that created numerous experts on the subject who actually had no clue what was going on. Again, I've talked about Doug and Dave before, and it's kind of funny how they were creating these crop circles. Essentially, they were bored, and they came up with the idea during pub night, and they went out in the fields and were making these crop circles for years, and nobody really paid any attention to them. Then all of a sudden, they made one where people could see, and it became an overnight sensation. All these people began writing books and speculating that, you know, aliens, and all these experts, these crop circle experts popped up everywhere. And a few years later, they came and said, look, we're behind all this. Here's pictures. Here's proof. They had the media come out, and they did a circle in front of the media on camera very quickly and very, very basic circle. And people were floored. And some of the experts said, no, this isn't real. They're lying. They're covering up and whatnot. But since the Doug and Dave days, these circles have become so intricate that there's got to be something else going on. I'm not saying aliens, but I think people are getting really clever, and it's really just really excellent artwork, I guess, just kind of how this article is kind of looking at it. Now, I got the book of the week here. The book of the week comes from an old familiar name. Maybe you've heard of this person. He's been, my gosh, it was March of last year. Wow, so it's been about a year since he had a book of the week here, and this is kind of the sequel to his first book. And the book of the week is by John B. Kachuba. Now, the significance of John Kachuba is the reason why I had him again here for the book of the week, not because I have like three other books of his and I've only talked about one in the last year. John was the third guest on a show called The Grand Dark Conspiracy, a radio show where the Paranormal News Insider started. And I just happened to be the first guest. I was the guinea pig on that show way back in, I want to say it was March of 2008. And John was probably May of 2008. Now, if you know anything about The Grand Dark Conspiracy and you know who the second guest was, which I'll reveal next week, you might be able to narrow down the book of the week for next week. And I'm not going to tell you. Well, let me get the book here. I'll post this in the chat room. And John Kachuba, I met him a number of years ago. He was doing a library presentation, and I had read his books, and I thought he was really interesting, very knowledgeable, a lot of great research into his stuff. And he'd been pretty much everywhere here in the state of Ohio, and got to chat with him for quite a while and became friends online. Still never have worked with him out there in the field. And he wrote a couple of books on Ohio. He's gone on to write all sorts of books. He's actually an award-winning author of 12 books, numerous articles, short stories, and poems. Among his awards are the Thurber Treat Prize for Humor Writing, awarded by the Thurber House, and first place in the Dogwood Fiction Contest. John teaches creative writing at Ohio University, Antioch University Midwest, and the Gotham Writers Workshop. He is a member of the Historical Novel Society, the Horror Writers Association, and the American Library Association's Authors for Libraries. And again, he's a frequent speaker on the paranormal, metaphysical topics at conferences, universities, and libraries, podcasts, radios, and TVs. And he's been a regular guest on the Coast to Coast AM show. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. And appeared at the Sundance Channel's TV production, Love Lust, The Paranormal. And you can find more information about John at johnkachuba.com. And that's J-O-H-N-K-A-C-H-U-B-A. A lot of people put the T in there. There's no T in his name. Come on. JohnKachuba.com. Let me drop that in the chat room there. And the book of the week this week Now, I had the first one on. It was called Ghost Hunting Ohio last year, last March. This is Ghost Hunting Ohio on the road again. And I'm not going to sing that for you. You know how that song goes. This book came out. Oh, my goodness. Figures. Lost my place. It's 238 pages. It's part of the America's Haunted Road Trip series. There's tons of these. I think they've probably done every state at this point. Well, the book came out in 2011, and you can get it pretty much anywhere. It's on Amazon. It's not too bad. It's really interesting because just when you think that he covered the entire state of Ohio in the first book, he comes back and he talks about a lot of interesting locations, and it's all broken down by sections of the state: Southwest, Northwest, Northeast, Central. A couple of places I've investigated here. One place I want to investigate, Franklin Castle. One place here I did, Punderson Manor. And on page 183, there's a spotlight for groups. Throughout the book, there's different spotlight pages. And this one is a spotlight on OPIN, or OPIN, which is the Ohio Paranormal Investigation Network, which was my former group that I operated. So there's a nice little page in the book about kind of a background and different things about my history, the group's history. And if you – I have other states. I have one on New Mexico. I have one on Tennessee, one on Virginia. I have one on Texas. I have all sorts of state – one in Canada, for crying out loud. I have books for all kinds of regional places. So if you've lived in Ohio, you've driven through Ohio, maybe you've been to some of these places. Really interesting stuff in here. Ohio State Reformatory's in here as well, which is interesting because I was just there. It's a good book. I always say every week I say it's a good book, but this is a good book. John is a very good storyteller, and he draws you in. He's a very excellent writer. Obviously, he's won a lot of awards. So he's very good at kind of just carving out a story, and he puts a little history and a lot of his personal accounts of being in these locations all together. And he really draws you into these stories. It's kind of a book that you start reading and you don't want to put down, not because you're scared, but because you're interested in what he has to say. And he says it in a very interesting way. And it really draws you in as a reader. And again, there's a lot of history. There's a lot of the stories that go along with these particular individual locations. And it's a really quick read, even though it's 183 pages. Very good book. Again, Ghost Hunting Ohio, On the Road Again by John B. Kachuba, the book of the week this week. And I guess I'll leave you with that. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Oh, wait a minute. That's not my saying. That's Casey Kasem. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.